Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV podcast, where the big question is can you sleep too much? Not really. That's the question we've been asking Si. He was at an astounding 11 and a half hours sleep last night, which I'm genuinely blown away with. Right. Anyway, I'm joined by Georgie Stevens, by Emma Sanders, and by the man, the legend, Christopher Pajak, as well, for this one. The man with the whitest arms in the universe. Those 24-inch milky pythons. That's incredible.
I'll let you decide.
Oh my god, that is outrageous. Right, so we've got a couple of kickoff questions this week, but we are going to be diving into a few topics. We're going to be talking about the three wins from three since the derby and how we're handling the Virgil van Dijk injury. We are going to be talking about the big week that's looming. Obviously, Atalanta is tonight, but we'll kind of skate around that and talk a little bit ahead further down the line to Manchester City. But the big topic is going to be Bobby Firmino, the future of him, why we think he's maybe not in great form, if there's anything statistically that backs that up, etc., etc. And we'll have a good old deep chat about that. So if there's anything you want to discuss with us live, you can use the live YouTube comments, but obviously after the fact, you can just tweet us at the Redmen TV. First kickoff question of the day comes from Robert Hallard at Hallard123. He says, the best Disney movie? I mean, I've had to intone because it wasn't really written like a question. But what is the best Disney movie? Georgie Stevens. I feel like we're going to have a real age gap disparity in our answers here, where you say, if you say like Moana, then basically that I mean, you're allowed, it's a bloody good film, but go on.
Mine are in colour, so that may be the big difference, but I'm just sort of joking. No, mine's probably Lilo and Stitch. I think that's a great one. I kind of grew up really upset that I couldn't have like a pet Stitch and that it wasn't a real thing. And it was sadly just a fictional character. But yeah, Lilo and Stitch, definitely. Any of the sequels.
Okay, sounds. Emma?
I mean, it's Disney Pixar, but it's Toy Story, obviously. Toy Story is the greatest film that's ever been made. So, I mean, that's just... there's no other film. So we can just move on now. It's Toy Story. That's the right answer.
Sorry, Chris, if you had anything other than Toy Story, but that's it. You've just been shut down there. Do you have anything other than Toy Story?
Yeah, loads. First of all, I've never heard of the one George just said, which is probably showing my age a little bit.
Lilo and Stitch.
Never heard.
Chris was going to town by the time Lilo and Stitch came out.
Why would I have been? I'd have been, about 18 when I got my driver's license, yeah. Because I wasn't going to town much earlier, not with this fresh face. Not like one of my mates. I think the answer for me is Robin Hood. That's the one that I enjoyed most when I was a kid. I just absolutely loved Robin Hood. It was amazing. Or The Jungle Book. I mean, any film that's got Louis Prima singing songs in there is just an absolute winner. And Louis Prima is still a big part of my life. Still one of my favourite singers of all time.
Is he son of his uncle or something?
Those actual recording sessions are incredible. If anybody's not a fan of Louis Prima, you need to get on to him. He's amazing.
He's still a big part of my life. Like your parents divorced, and he still comes round and takes me out on the weekends. The best music in any Disney film is The Jungle Book by an absolute mile. But it's hard not to go with Toy Story. It's Aladdin for me.
Love Aladdin.
Yeah, it's another absolutely perfect movie, and you can't beat a good bit of Robin Williams as well. Right, we had a second kickoff question because I wanted to kind of keep it loosely football related. Tom, who's at Nabby Lad on Twitter, says the year is 2024. The coronavirus has mutated to unprecedented levels, resulting in a zombie-like outbreak.
Did he mean 2020 or 2024?
No, honestly, yeah, he's given us a little bit of a stay of execution here. You must pick three Liverpool players to survive with. Who do you pick, Chris Pajak? Who do you pick?
Well, Henderson, I'm assuming he'll still play in 2024. And he's going to be me Rick from The Walking Dead, like me captain type of guy, me constant, if you will. He'll be a big part of my life for certain. I'm going to go
almost
Bobby
as big as Louis Prima.
Not quite. Next is going to be Bobby Firmino, because, you know, in 3 years' time, and if this has sort of slowly got to this mutated level, then I think he'll have gone completely and utterly insane. And I think you need someone like that to survive in a post-apocalyptic world. Someone who's just going to make guns out of wood and think, like, just, he seems like the kind of guy who'd just be able to put his hand to anything and you'd never know. But a bit like the guy from the Goonies, the little Chinese guy, you used to have like little rocket packs. That's what I'm looking for in Bobby Firmino in 3 years' time. And then I'm going to go with Leanne Rowe, because survival of the species, people. Survival of the species is going to be key at this point.
Oh, okay. Well, okay. I'm not even going to dive in. That's fine. I'm a little concerned on Bobby Firmino that you'd just wake up in the middle of the night and he'd be eating your foot. You know what I mean? Like that. And he's not even turned. He just decides that he likes the taste of human flesh without having to go full zombie. That wouldn't shock me at all. Just some grizzle of your own grizzle in between Bobby's pearly white teeth, which is still somehow absolutely glowing immaculate white, despite the fact the world is long since ended. Georgia, who would you go with?
I'd probably pick Hendo, because I think, you know, the same, he's probably going to keep a calm head. I'd have Allison. I just feel like, you know, he'd be a protector. He'd sacrifice himself for us if he needed
got
to.
Got a Bear Grylls quality to him.
Yeah, and his beard would just keep growing. I want to see what happens. I want to see what happens with his, yeah, with his hair, with everything. I want to see, like, unravel. And then I'd probably, out there, Curtis Jones. I just feel like he'd find a bike and it would just be a good time. I feel like Curtis Jones would go back to, like,
wheeling away from zombies.
Prime scouser.
Wheeling into them.
Yeah.
He'd turn his bike into a weapon.
Yeah. I feel like you need that bit of, like, raw youthful. I mean, he might have tamed by 2024, but you'll still have a wheelie in him that doesn't leave you.
Yeah, definitely. Go on, Emma, what are you going for?
So I feel like we're saying the same names here, but I was like, right, I need someone calm for when I'm absolutely, like, losing it. So it was either going to be Van Dijk or Alisson, but Van Dijk would just intimidate me and he'd scare me because he's just ridiculously badass. So I'm going to go for Alisson, and he's also, you know, a very handsome man, which helps. So Alisson, again,
the propagation of the species there, is that
all? Yeah. Hendo, again. and
same reasons.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I feel like Emma's going to go have a really long hot bath and a good think about this question after the fact as well, the way it's going.
Did they all die well? There was a massive foursome and the zombie snuck up on them, and that's how they died.
I mean, what else are you going to do?
What a way to go.
No, I mean, look, Hendo will be your leader, you organise, you know, he'll do all the stuff that nobody else can be asked to do. moving on quickly, and then Bobby again, because Bobby's just Bobby, isn't he? He's just hilarious. So if you need someone to have a good time with, and also if a zombie does come along, Bobby can do one of those high kick chop chop things, take out his neck. So
right, yeah, I like it. I'm not sure which way to go with this. I'm either going to go with the full on worker bees analogy and just have Henderson, Milner and Andy Robbo, who are just just go out and do all my work. Yeah, exactly. Just go out and do all my work for me. They go out there and my enforcers, you know what I mean? Like, they go and do all the brutality of the post-apocalyptic world and keep me sheltered from it. The alternative is to go with, like, Virgil, Alisson and Fabinho, and just because, you know, they're going to help you reach higher places, i.e. safety. So if you stand on the shoulders, you're probably safe. But also, if any of them was to die, there's lots of them. So if you had to eat someone, there's just plenty of meat there. I was going to go with Matip, but just a bit too stringy. Yeah. But more of a ladder. So maybe he has his uses. But no, good solid defenders around you. But also, yeah, you know, plenty of sustenance for those winter months should it all go awry. Let us know yours, your three Liverpool survivors to get you through the zombie corona apocalypse in the comments. Yeah, that would be absolutely wonderful. Right, we're going to get through to the proper topics in a moment. Yeah, we're going to be talking about the derby and the Virgil injury and how we're coping. We're going to have a big chat all about Bobby Firmino. And obviously City looming, and in fact we're going to talk to Georgia about her upcoming television appearances as well. But yeah, do stay tuned. We've got a brand new book. It's out right now. It's Champions of Everything, looking back on an absolutely amazing season for the Mighty Reds from a slightly more irreverent perspective. Here's a little look at that. The second Redmen TV book, Champions of Everything, is available for sale right now. It comes in two editions, the standard edition and the special edition, which comes signed with a custom message of your choice and with a limited edition Redmen TV sticker pack as well. The book is huge. It is A4 size and it is chock full of insight. Photographs from around the world following the Mighty Reds, who were reigning European champions, who won the Super Cup, who became champions of the world, and then capped it all off with a 19th league title, becoming champions of England. The book looks at the highs, lows, absolute insanity and bitterness of rival fans, and some of the craziness from our own fan base as well along the way. It is available now on the Redmen TV store. Get involved. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Redmen podcast. Yeah, we're having good fun so far. Some off-camera discussion about a few of those picks, which is not fit for public consumption, so we'll move on. Right, yeah, three wins from three since the Merseyside derby. Emma, and you know, Virgil van Dijk, losing Virgil van Dijk is a massive blow. And, you know, I was having a conversation with the Toffee TV lads, who were kind of a bit like, well, why is it being such a big talking points? And they obviously look at it from the Pickford perspective, and it's, look, the fact is, one of the best players on the planet being out for a season is actually news. It's news beyond the limits of the City of Liverpool. And it, you know, I there was a real thing there where, and it might well yet, of course, but it could have massively derailed Liverpool's season. I think there were a lot of eyes on Liverpool expecting there to be massive troubles, because, you know, the prevailing logic was Liverpool were crap defensively, and that was what undid everything they did. And then Virgil van Dijk came in and fixed everything. And look, there's a strong case to make all of that, you know, and that could all be true to some degree. So it's really pleasing to see how Liverpool have kind of managed their way through these last few games.
Yeah, I think that's a key word, isn't it? Manage their way through, because they've kind of, yeah, it's not been spectacular. It's been a little bit, you know, job done type thing, which is, like you say, I think all that they needed to do, because all eyes obviously were on the defence. It was about just picking up results. And I think it'll be a bit like that, you know, over the next couple of weeks, just because the fixtures schedule is just so ridiculous now. You know, every team's playing like, what, every 2-3 days. Like, I have no idea what day of the week it is. And I think twice this morning, Si and Ross had to tell me that Liverpool were playing on different days than what I'd said, because I just have no idea when they're actually playing. So the whole like, well, domestic league is madness at the moment. There's just goals flying in everywhere. So you do still feel, though, that come the end of the season, the team with the strongest sort of core and defensive stability will still come out on top. And that's obviously, you know, as you said, Van Dijk coming in is essentially kind of, you know, what's taken Liverpool right to the top, alongside Alisson and obviously some other key players around them. But you do think, like, especially Van Dijk's arrival with Alisson has sort of provided that sort of stability at the back. And
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what happens this season. But I do think towards, you know, after January, I think it'll start to level out. And but I think the teams with the best defence will start to kind of come out on top. And I think that's where Liverpool are going to be really tested, because at the moment, as I say, you can kind of just bundle through and it's just about picking up the wins. But I think our tests, it's going to come when the games are they're starting to be in the legs, you know, and I think that's when the rotation is that we're doing now is going to play a key role, because you're not just playing towards the next game. You're planning ahead for, because it's not like he's going to be coming back in a few weeks. He's out for months. So you've got to plan ahead. So that, you know, the likes of Nat Phillips, who's obviously not played, you know, a lot of 90 minutes of first team football, sort of week in, week out. You know, is he going to be able to sort of still be able to play at the levels kind of expected of him come January? Obviously, Joe Gomez is going to be playing constantly. we all know John Matip is just, you know, made out of sugar. So it's, you know, it's how long these players can consistently perform. And I think, you know, I think that's going to start to show, you know, in the new year.
I think what's interesting and what we've seen so far, I think Emma's right, Liverpool are going to have to find a way to kind of get back to their best in the medium term, certainly, if not the short term, George. But in the short term, I think what's clever is I think Liverpool are being a bit cannier, you know, with how they play. I mean, it's interesting with the Nat Phillips stuff is that Nat Phillips was just told to go and be a defender. Nat Phillips wasn't told at the weekend to go out and be Virgil van Dijk. He wasn't told to go out and be Joe Gomez. You know, he's smashing balls away. You know what I mean? There's no, like, Nat Phillips, you're now, as our eighth choice centre-half, expected to come in and be this super cultured centre-half. You know, and I think Emma's right, there's going to come a point maybe in the season where we're going to need to get up, you know, we need to go better, get up to speed or what have you. But, you know, I think that's part and parcel of it. I think it's quite intelligent with what we've done. I don't think we've been great. I don't think our performances have been great. But again, it shows an understanding. You can see Jordan Henderson taking on more responsibility just to make sure that the back four have a little bit more, you know, have that responsibility taken away from them a little bit.
Yeah, I think the strange thing is, you know, if a team loses a centre-back, 9 times out of 10, like, say, a team selling a centre-back, they know that that outgoing is happening. They have time to prepare for, you know, other partnerships and things like that. I think with the Van Dijk injury is we hadn't really played with, like, another partnership. It wasn't something that we regularly did, really. Even in cup games, it was either the whole squad changed and there was no... We never really experimented with Joe Gomez playing alongside someone else, or, you know, Joe Gomez himself was never really this regular starter. It was between him and Matip. And I think that's what really threw us, is that. And then, you know, obviously Fabinho picking up a knock again, it's like we're kind of learning on the job of, oh, well, this works in this scenario, this works. And I think Klopp's done a brilliant job of, like you said, not trying to force, like, a circle peg into a square hole. It's never going to happen. Nat Phillips is never going to be Van Dijk. But Nat Phillips is good at what Nat Phillips does, so just let him do that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I just want to add on to what George said there, because it was sort of pertinent, and I just want to expand on it, the Fabinho injury. Like, we're not only missing the best centre-half in world football, we're missing one of the best DMs in world football at the weekend. You know what I mean? And that's not talked about enough for me, if I'm honest, because... What, my words, that changes everything, doesn't it? And not only does it change everything in the game that we've missed Fabinho in, but it changes everything in the games that he was available for and Van Dijk was injured in. So now Liverpool are trying to adjust not only to a new defence, but a new midfield and how that midfield actually protects the defenders. And, you know, I think there's some underlying statistics which I think should be quite encouraging to Liverpool fans. And these are freely available XG stats. If you go to understat.com, you can look at this, and I do quite often. And Liverpool's expected goals against is only 8.47 this season, which is less than Leicester's, just over Tottenham's. So Liverpool, Leicester, Tottenham, Everton, Southampton are all in the 8 expected goals against. Wolves are like 9, Chelsea is 7, Villa are 7, Arsenal 7, City is 7. We've conceded 7 goals, pretty much more than what we were expected to achieve. Now, I know not everybody puts everything into expected goals and the modelling, but it does give you an underlying thing that Liverpool have conceded some really sloppy goals that they probably shouldn't have conceded. And I think as Liverpool fans, we can remember each one of them, you know, and that's, that for me is at least a note of encouragement that we're not as bad defensively as we think we are, and that Liverpool are doing everything in the powers while spinning plates here, there and everywhere to continue to garner wins and stuff. And fact of the matter is, look, yes, we're struggling for numbers, but you wouldn't actually say that we were actually in the game at the weekend. Did anyone actually think we were going to lose that game? No. Even when we were 1-0 down, did anyone actually think this is a game we're going to lose? No. But I rest my case.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. No, that's right, isn't it? But equally, I think we, as we were saying during commentary, where we, it did feel, it didn't feel like we were going to lose, but it didn't feel as though it wasn't possible for us to concede, which is what we have had for a while. We felt very, very imperious, whereas we do feel back a little bit to like that point where we can dominate a game for 89 minutes and concede a goal absolutely out of nowhere, which is the concern. But then again, it's an expected concern we're currently playing with, like, yeah, you know, a very makeshift team indeed. And it's interesting because we were very nearly without Alisson as well. And there's a world where, you know, if you've not got Alisson, Van Dijk and Fabinho, well, Christ, you very much are into that pack of teams who are going to be scraping to finish fourth. Because you look at Manchester United, and you look at like your Chelsea's, and you look at your Arsenal's, and you look, they've all got deficiencies in key areas, and we haven't had them for ages. We've had absolute towers of strength in those. It's just so, I think we're very, very fortunate that we've got an Alisson back in at the time we have, because I think he's gonna help immensely in that way. If nothing else, because you know, you can get through our defence, but you still got that mentality of, oh shit, I've still got to beat the best goalkeeper in the world, which is definitely something that is a struggle for people, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to go back onto the understat stuff as well, because I think the other thing that it showcases is that our expected points is like 15, and we 15.24. So even with the dodgy defending, we're still expecting to win games because of our attack. And, you know, it's very easy to get into the defence isn't good enough mentality, but when your attack is good enough, that balances out. So for all the whinging we can do about defenders and, you know, we don't have the players and stuff like that, we've actually still got players all around the pitch. You can win those games. Yeah. And I think that's massively important and something that we seem to be forgetting a little bit at this time.
Yeah, Emma.
Yeah, and I think like it's important to remember as well that every team is shipping goals at the moment. Like this isn't just exclusive to Liverpool, you know, not being as defensively solid as we were last season. We're seeing this across all of the teams in the Premier League. Like there is just more goals. And again, whether or not this comes down to the schedule and the fact that, you know, players are just making more individual mistakes because, you know, they're having to concentrate and like keep these high focus levels basically every 2 to 3 days. But I think that is encouraging as well, that the fact that, you know, this isn't an isolated incident for Liverpool. It's happening across the board. And like I say, I genuinely think it will start to level out.
Absolutely. And just before I come to you, Judge, this is going to be a big test this week for everything we've discussed. I think so far so good. But now that, you know, Matip's going to be thrown back into the conversation this week, one way or the other, this, you know, it was a very tricky away tie with Atalanta, but obviously then Man City at the weekend, the Man City who tore us apart with a good healthy Liverpool side put together after restart. I mean, Georgia, that's something that is certainly, you know, if we can survive this week, then I'm not sure, you know, there aren't many tougher weeks actually we've got, you know, between now and January certainly.
Yeah, this week I think will be the testing point, and it'll be something that we measure ourselves against. You know, we'll look at it and we'll compare it to last season, but we'll also, you know, in probably 3-4 months' time, look back at it and think either, you know, flipping out and we do well just to keep the ship kind of going there. I think as well, what we're saying with the whole of the Premier League kind of suddenly banging in goals left and right, it's got to take into account fans on in the stadium. And it works in both ways. You have that lapse in concentration that is no longer kind of boosted by fans screaming at you every 2 minutes. But also from a forward sense of kind of thinking is they don't have that pressure anymore. They don't have. I think we've seen it remarkably with Calvert-Lewin and the way he's just bagging goals left and right. Now, give it last season when he wasn't necessarily, you know, scoring and there was questions raised of him as a striker and his ability. Similar to what we're having a conversation about Firmino. You know, the crowd certainly doesn't help. You've got people on your back. But I think for forwards, this is probably the easiest time for them to be a forward because, yeah, you know, there is literally no pressure on them. It's a training match, essentially.
There's a super chat we've had come in here from Ashley Frith, which I think is really interesting. He says, let's be honest, Matip Gomez is our strongest centre-back partnership with Virgil out. However, I like the fact Phillip is an old-school defender we will need. And I wonder whether the concentration thing's actually not a bad point when you refer to Nat Phillips, Georgia, because, you know, there's a lad who's going to be nothing but concentrated. You know, he's chucked in and his job, he isn't, you know, he doesn't need to overthink his role at the moment. His job is just to come in and head shit out and kick, yeah, and kick stuff away, and that actually might benefit us in a weird way.
Definitely. And I think we saw it with Reece Williams as well, of like, you know, the idea of this lad who's learned his trade in the lower leagues of football, and it's a lot different than it was 10 years ago. It's a lot different than it was 5 years ago. You know, lower league teams are now looking to have a structure and an identity in a way they play football, and, you know, Reece Williams and the Liverpool staff aren't just going to send them to somewhere that's playing, you know, Route 1 football every 5 minutes. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I mean, we might need to, but it's the idea that, you know, these centre-backs have kind of learned their trade. They've experienced it probably against bigger and tougher forwards than the Premier League has to offer in terms of, you know, kind of what they have. But it's the quality that they're coming up against. But like you said, I think the actual younger, you know, generation, and then the ones who are quote-unquote more inexperienced than the Liverpool side, may actually be the thing that saves us, because they'll be nothing but kind of motivated and 100% on the ball, because this is their time to kind of stake a claim. And we've said it, it's not that they're going to replace Virgil van Dijk, but who knows when Virgil comes back, if there's an option for a partnership there.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, we're going to move things on. I want to talk about Bobby Firmino. For a couple of reasons, like, you know, there's a chance we could leave this a couple of games, because obviously there's a couple of big games looming. There's every chance Bobby Firmino kicks on, but I'm kind of hoping that we totally jinx it and we talk about Bobby Firmino and then he just has an absolutely stellar week ahead. But I think at the moment, Chris, there's no real escaping the fact that Bobby's not in form at the moment. You know, he's 10 appearances so far this season, just one goal and two assists. We got a comment here from Connor S, which we can kind of kick off with. He just says, just need to rest, don't throw Bobby out with the bathwater. But there have been a lot of people kind of, I mean, you know, there's always going to be people who have massive overreactions, and you can see them all over the internet, what it's for. But I think even the most level-headed of Liverpool fan here is starting to think, Is there something that needs to be done about Bobby Firmino? What do you think?
I think he's lost form at the moment. I don't think he's playing as well as he has been for us. I think, you know, you're not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. We know what a high level he can play at, and we know sort of that he's a world-class player. Now, the difference that we've got, and why probably a lot of Liverpool fans are talking like this and thinking like this, is that we've got a genuine player on the bench who's scoring goals, and it was actually making it difficult for in our eyes, Jurgen Klopp. And that's obviously Diogo Jota, 3 goals in 3 games for him in a week. All of a sudden you've got him, never mind knocking on the door, he's got the battering ram with Shaqiri, and the two of them little guys are trying to lift it up and smash into Jurgen's office. And that's a good thing.
Sat on each other's shoulders with a giant trench coat over them.
Yeah, exactly. but this is, look, you know, Diogo Jota has done really well, but Diogo Jota hasn't come on and played the nine. So it's whether you trust in Salah or Mane to play that nine as well as Bobby did. And, you know, there's loads of things that we could talk about here. Like, first of all, it's the amount of minutes that he's played over the last few months. I know you've got a load written down there, Paul, whether you want to give some context to this part of the conversation or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you want to? Yeah?
No, you're all right.
No, okay, so.
No, I think we will do it in a moment. But I think what's interesting about it, Chris, is that just kind of what you just on the Jota stuff, it's an unusual situation for us, this, where, you know, normally we bring lads in who are meant to be upgrades on our players, and the players we've got just get better. So, like, we bring Naby Keita in and Gini Wijnaldum just gets brilliant, and Oxlade-Chamberlain comes in and Henderson becomes, and Fabinho and Henderson becomes even better. We've got a couple of incidents where you just buy someone who's boss and they drop in. Alisson and Virgil van Dijk are the obvious examples of that. It's actually a weird circumstance here where you've got a lad that you really want to be stepping up. You want to see a reaction from Bobby. You want to see him go back to being better, but we've actually now, it's the first time we've been able to have this conversation with one of the front three where there is another lad in the understudy category who's not just a hope, like, you know, you're hoping Ryan Brewster comes good, or you're hoping that Daniel Sturridge stays fit, or you're hoping that, or you have to change the system in order to fit a Divock Origi in. This is the first time we've ever actually had a natural fit for the front three. But as you say, kind of banging on the door, waiting to come in.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point. I think, you know, again, I was looking at the underlying stats behind a lot of this, and, you know, last season, after seven games, we'd obviously won all 21 points that were available, hadn't we? Now, we'd only scored 16 goals last season. This season, after seven games, we've scored 17 goals. Mm-hmm. So, are you judging Bobby Firmino on just Bobby Firmino, or are you judging him on team performances? Or are you judging him on how the front three play together? Because, yeah, his XG himself is less, just over half of what it was. It's 0.29 now, and it was... it's 0.28 now, and it was 0.48 a game. So it's considerably dropped this season. But actually, I went and tallied up the front three over a period, and actually the front three's expected goals are 1.7 a game at the moment, and they were only 1.61 last season. So actually, we're expected to score more goals with just those three players than we were last season, when Bobby's XG was much higher. So is Bobby's XG lower because he's creating more space for Mane and Salah? Who knows? I mean, these are the questions that I think it's too simple to just say to somebody, well, we should drop Bobby because he's on poor form, because he's part of a team, and we've got to remember that at all times. And the team is greater than the sum of its parts. And is the team with Bobby in better than the team with somebody else in? That's the question that we need to be asking. And until we've got data, we won't know the answer.
Well, that's an interesting point. And Emma, I mean, I guess that's the point that we can't know is that, you know, is here. We know what a pivotal cog he's been in the machine for years now under Jurgen Klopp. And it's all well and good saying, you know, I it's always been a basic, well, just more goals. Well, yeah, fine. And I don't think anyone would disagree that Bobby Firmino probably could and probably should score more goals, because he does get chances. He just doesn't score them. You know, when he gets them, he's not a natural goal scorer. I think all of us would probably be happy to say that about Bobby Firmino. But it is that thing of, if you pull him out and let's say you put Jota in, or you move Salah to centre forward, we don't know what's the knock-on effect of that. You know, Salah might score more goals, but does it mean that Mane scores less goals? And, you know, that's always been our issue, is that we've got two lads who score 20 goals a season. Not many teams have got that, and Bobby might be the guy who actually allows that to happen.
Yeah, you're right. Like, he is the fall guy. He is the guy who does the dirty work and doesn't really get glory from it. I was watching the highlights again from the game this weekend, and there was that moment where he just sort of, like, I think it was... The chance for Henderson where he had a shot sort of just on the edge of the box and it just went wide of the post, and it was Firmino who was sort of hustling in the box and basically sort of kept the ball alive and then sort of teed it off for Henderson and he got that chance, and that sort of epitomised like what Firmino does. And I've been quite, you know, public in the past, like he's my favourite Liverpool player. I'm a huge Firmino fan and I have a lot of respect for the work that he does. However, well, I completely agree with Chris's point of, you know, we're not going to know truly until we see, you know, data, until we know what kind of runs he's making into space and et cetera, et cetera. But now I look at somebody like Jota who's come on, and not only is he also providing the runs and doing the kind of dirty work that we see Firmino do, he is adding the goals as well, which is why I'm sort of leaning towards, not that I think we need to, it's not necessarily about dropping Firmino. It's the fact that we've now got an option to rotate. And, you know, like I said before, we're playing games every two, three days. So why not just change it up? Put the man in form in at the moment and just say to Firmino, look, this is not us saying we don't appreciate what you do, but you need a rest. And we've got a guy here who's come in. He's, you know, firing on all cylinders. He's getting goals as well as doing the work off the ball. So let's give him a game or two. And then I'll throw you in and I'll give you an opportunity to sort of, you know, come back in and show what we're missing. And I think that'll be a good thing. I think that'll give him the boost that he needs.
Yeah, it's interesting that Chris was saying it before. Looking into the minutes and whatever that he's played since joining Liverpool, and even before, and he's never played less than 3,000 minutes a season, and, you know, top end getting closer to four. And it's interesting, the players that you see clutched around them as the most minutes played for Liverpool in that time. You know, early doors, he's like, you know, he starts start the first season, seventh most minutes across all competitions, behind the likes of Milner, Klein and Lallana. And I think those names are quite interesting because, you know, they're all lads who are a couple of years or a few years older than him, who've all, you know, Milner's absolutely eternal, but we're seeing this season now where you're starting to see the limits of James Milner. Lallana moved on, Klein's body couldn't handle the stress. Then when Genie comes in, Genie is a perpetual figure at the top of those charts. But it's also interesting that we've been trying to buy players in and around Genie Wijnaldum's position to kind of bolster that to insulate ourselves against, I think, you know, not needing him as much long term. And the other ones who play loads of minutes in that time, you know, after coming in and establishing themselves, are your Salahs, your Manes, your Trents, and your Robbos, all of whom I actually think have come back, Georgia, come back this season. Trent may be a slight exception to this because I think his injury over the summer didn't help him. But Robbo comes back after lockdown. He looks fitter. Salah looks fitter. Mane looks just as fit as he ever does. I feel like there's loads more to come. But there might be a point. Bobby Firmino's 29 now. And he's played a lot of football, and that's not even accounting, you know, Copa America and World Cups that have been chucked into that, and all the travel for international footy for Brazil in between. You know, some lads just react to these things, but I think Fernando Torres, you know, it's a different example because he's a super pace merchant, but he gets injuries and that disappears. Bobby Firmino hasn't lost pace, but it's possible that we have just used the best of Bobby Firmino.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yeah, I think it's interesting what you said about, you know, who he ranks among. Like, none of those players, they're pretty much box-to-box players, whether they're, you know, fullbacks or midfielders. Bobby Firmino is a forward, a striker, false nine, whatever you want to call them. And there's a brilliant article by Sky Sports, and it literally breaks down in stats of what he's done. And he topped the charts last season as the forward who covered the most distance and spent the least amount of time walking in the whole Premier League. Now, what we say about measuring, we don't measure Bobby on goals, we don't measure him on this, you know. The one thing we can't actually measure is maybe the third man runs that he makes and the space that he creates, unless you want to, you know, watch every game and tally where he does that, which I'm sure somebody would. But what we can, if we don't measure Bobby on goals, then we do kind of measure him on the pressure that he puts up top. And last season, he topped the charts again of winning the ball in the final third. Now this season, you know, we're not even there, but he's not even in the top 10. And above that, there's 10 other Liverpool players who are above him in winning the ball in the final third. So it's not that the team performance has gone down. It's generally just that his has. And there's nothing wrong with that. It is form. And like you said, if you're playing this kid, like this guy, every game, you are going to reach a point where it does dip. And yeah. I think because of what's happened, you know, with the team, we've said that before, when the team's been performing super well and Bobby's in there, you just let it slide. But I think with the kind of tight tight wins that we've had, and you know, the odd stumble here and there, it's just kind of shined a spotlight on what he is and isn't doing.
Yeah, it's again, this is the thing. I mean, Chris, ultimately, it's still early doors in the season. I think it's hard, but we've been saying this a lot in the last few weeks. We've got our understanding of how football is and what football looks like, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a whole load of factors that are, you know, if you were trying to extrapolate something out, there's so many more unknowns this season than there have ever been. There's just as much chance that Firmino just, you know, I don't know whether it's just confidence, whether a good goal here just kicks him on and he goes on a little run, or it might be whatever. I don't know. It feels to me a little bit like he's playing against himself a little bit. You know, like he's reverting to type. And for type, Bobby Firmino is, you know, you've got those players who are flair players who, when it isn't going well for them, they double down on themselves and they dig themselves into a deeper hole by trying the bigger and the more extravagant. God knows we've all played them in five-a-side. I'm sure, I have a feeling Georgia might be one of them. Just tries the bigger shots from distance when things aren't going. You know, he just goes for top bins to pull himself out the hole when it's not been a great game.
Let's whip off the rainbow flick, you know, that's going to fix it all.
Yeah, just to prove to everyone you are a good footballer, despite the fact that it's not been going well in that game. But Bobby Firmino, I think, is the exact opposite to that, because I think he goes back to doing the basics of his game. But the problem is when he does that, it becomes harder for the naked eye to almost judge what he's doing, because that ultimately, you know, football is at the top end is a goals and assists business, and if they're not quite going for him, it is harder for us without going into the underlying stats to see quite what Bobby Firmino does.
Yeah, I think so, but I don't think it's that difficult to get into a lot of the underlying stats. I mean, let's talk goals and assists then, Paul. Liverpool's front three have scored 12 goals, sorry, in seven games. That's 1.7 goals a game. Extrapolate that over 38 games, you've got 65 goals from your front three in the Premier League. Last season, our front three scored 46 goals in the Premier League. So are you judging Bobby Firmino on just Bobby Firmino's performance, or are you judging him as part of the team? And that's where it comes down to for me. Is that people need to judge him as part of the team. And would Diogo Jota have come on and got goals in the last three games if it wasn't for the front three softening the other team up, tiring the other team out, Liverpool playing the ball around, keeping the ball loads? So until Jürgen tells me that he's taken Bobby Firmino out, and it will probably be for a rest if that is the case, there is absolutely no way I'm going to sit here and tell you that Bobby Firmino's done, because Liverpool are top of the table. The front three have scored more goals, you know, than they're on course to score more goals, even if they just played the same level between now and the end of the season as last season when we won the league. I mean, talk about just like, it just seems mental to me. It seems absolutely insane that we're having this conversation when we're sat at the top of the table and everyone knows the defence is actually the issue. It's just fucking insane.
Yeah. Georgia.
One, I just love the idea of Jürgen Klopp calling up Chris personally and saying, listen, lad, I'm dropping Bobby this week. I just need you to know, just so you know. I just want to brace you.
Chris, are you sitting down?
Yeah, very nice, Jürgen. You're not. Yeah, because understat.com says this, Jürgen.
Have you considered, Jürgen, stats? Can you get Pep Linders to look at some stats for me, please? Yeah, I'll give you my logins.
Venus on the call.
Yeah.
Well, turn your camera on, Jürgen. No, Jürgen, camera on.
Yeah.
I think it's the idea that, yeah, we are talking about it, because I think Liverpool fans for the past kind of month, we've had a bit of a wobble and we've never been in that situation. I think we've all just been a little kind of shocked by what happened with Van Dijk and the derby and everything that's gone with that. And it's just kind of piled the pressure again onto Firmino. But I think the important thing was, would Jota have done what he done if he was starting? You don't know. Is he a sub impact player? There's nothing.
Are we tactically, and it's a bit daft, I don't think this is truly true, but are we playing a little bit of rope-a-dope, you know, in that regard of, you know, of trying to, as we say, do what we do and trust that normally it might work, but if it doesn't, you've got these super impact subs to come in when things are running a little low on fitness or whatever in the game. Yeah, it's an interesting one. Emma, what have you got?
Yeah, I just think I'd like to sort of talk a little bit about how, you know, we've obviously had to try and change things tactically, defensively. We were talking about Nat Phillips before sort of coming in and just being this player who just sort of, you know, with respect, just kind of gets rid of it. That's not to say, you know, that he can't do more with the ball, but that's kind of, you know, he's just doing the basics. And I think, I know we've discussed it on Redmen already this season, but maybe like Trent's role seems to be a little bit less advanced because he's, you know, taking on a bit more responsibility of doing the defensive duties. Now, when we're talking about these different changes in defence and the fact that the midfield then have to provide more cover to sort of help out the defence, are we then seeing the front three having to create more for themselves than chances being created for them as well? So does that mean that Firmino is now having to drop deeper to kind of, you know, provide a bit more of that link between the midfield and the front three? Are we seeing him perhaps playing more out wide because Trent and Robbo aren't in as many advanced areas? Are we seeing him, you know, act more as the kind of, you know, as Georgia mentioned before, the kind of the third man assister, or the, you know, the runner before the chance is created? Are we seeing him play a different role because the roles around the team have had to adapt because of our defensive frailties?
The thing, the one for me right now, and why I think it's a bit of a non-issue, because I don't think, and I think you were kind of driving at this, Chris, I don't think Jota's the man for Firmino, because it fundamentally changes our front three, and that might well be, you know, we might find next season that, like, having, you know, the way that we went from just Mane to Mane and Salah, when you've got these two super pacey guys on the flanks, we might find that a Mane Salah Jota is the absolute answer. You know, it might, and then you buy another couple of guys and you do similar things behind them, and that's it's a revolution. It's Minamino for me, and until Minamino's ready, I don't see the point of. I don't think we're going to see Firmino dropped out, because I think Minamino, what he's meant to be, and what we're seeing from him, is he's being groomed as the understudy to Roberto Firmino. He performs many of the functions that Firmino does, and he's not the one knocking on the door. I think the fact that Jota's knocking on the door is great, but it just means that we're able to rotate Salah and Mane, or Mane maybe a little bit more, and keep more coming out of those guys. At the minute, yeah, until we see Minamino follow a similar suit, we might, Bobby Firmino will just carry on, because everything you said is true. Whilst Mane and Salah are still performing, it's fine. If Minamino can come in and do what Bobby does, but add goals, well, that's when you've got a real conversation on your hands.
Yeah, I agree with that, Paul. I think Minamino is the man that's going to eventually, hopefully, take over from Bobby Firmino if he's good enough for that. And, you know, I just wonder whether if Taki Minamino comes into the side and Mane and Salah continue to keep scoring, but he doesn't score, would that actually give us a better marker of what that role is? Yeah. And how long before, you know, how many games with Taki Minamino not scoring before people start whinging that he's not the answer, even though Liverpool continue to win games and Mane and Salah continue to... It's just... one of those positions. It's, you know, and unfortunately, I say position, it's a role rather than a position. It's one of those roles, you know, when you're not there to score it and be at the business end every single time, when you're there to create space so others, after a while, people get bored of you and people are going to start questioning. I think Emma's point was absolutely perfect there. I think everything that she was saying about how, you know, different players' roles changing, every time she mentioned a new player and a new role, I kept thinking of instances over the last three games where something like that's happened, where Bobby Firmino has been on the halfway line picking the ball up, where Mo Salah has been more on the right wing because Trent hasn't been there, you know, and it's all part and parcel. You can't just take a team game and look at individuals in a team game. It isn't about that, and it's never been about that. I don't know what you think on that, Georgia.
I think that, I mean, there's literally evidence to back up what you've said of Firmino's heat map this season, albeit, you know, a lot shorter and we're going on shorter games, but his heat map this season is a lot deeper and a lot more central than it has been for the past two. last season he was pretty spread across both wings and, you know, central of the 6-yard box and deep of the 18, but pretty much straight across, but no deeper than the halfway line. The season before is predominantly on the left, kind of outside the 18-yard box, but again, no higher than the halfway line. And we saw that because of kind of the Mané and Robertson role then wasn't fully established. And then last season that really took off. So, you know, shifting towards the right, operating there. Whereas this season, he's operating around the halfway line and more on the right on Salah's side, which relates to what we're saying about Trent and giving him options on that side, because the roles shift. And I think it's hard to understand and it's hard to get your head around a striker not scoring, because that is just the way that we grew up thinking that's, you know, your number nine is the one who gets you the goals. But the fact is, you know, Bobby Firmino isn't Harry Kane. Bobby Firmino isn't Jamie Vardy. He never has been. And that gets a lot of stick. That gets, you know, the defensive forward throw, all things like that. But he isn't. And he's not quite a number 10. He is literally just this enigma that we've got playing forward.
His problem is he scored 27 goals in a season once. He scored 10 goals in like 12 games in the Champions League. And that was the season where he announced himself. And it's a bit like the Salah thing, where he had that amazing breakout season for us. And he's kind of, we watch him every week, so we see how brilliant he is. But in the wider world, maybe, you know, again, the eyeball test, that without going into the deeper statistics, yada, 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 your layman of football goes, well, number nine scores less goals, isn't in form. I mean, the only thing on this is that, like I said, I don't think any one of us thinks Bobby Firmino's in form. I don't think any one of us thinks he's playing brilliantly. I mean, again, one goal this season is not enough, even by Bobby Firmino's standards, is poor. It's just whether we think that's because he's done, or whether there's a number of different factors that it could be. And I think at the moment it's kind of too soon to tell. And unfortunately, as I say, I think until his natural understudy's ready and he gets that, you know, and Minamino comes in and does the job better, I don't think we'll ever we can truly know, Chris.
Yeah, and I just want to sort of riff off one of your points there. You know, that season was 2017-18, wasn't it? The one with all the goals and stuff. And he played less minutes that season than he did the previous year and than he did last season. And he scored well more goals. And you know, we're talking about how many minutes and, you know, is he tired and all that type of stuff. I mean, in the league, I'm talking about, he played 2,814 minutes that season, scored 15 goals. Last season, he plays 3,000 plus and scores 9 goals. You know, and he actually, you know, played in only 37 games that season. And look, there are a lot of things, even in just this year's stats and stuff. You look at his key passes. His key passes per game are around the same as they've always been. Yeah. His shots a game are over one shot. It's 1.2 shots a game down, which sort of backs Emma's point up again, doesn't it? And, you know, I do think we need to respect what Bobby has done over the last few years. We can question his form, absolutely. But don't question his ability, because ability's been there for 5 years. I just don't want people to start this sort of witch hunt for Bobby Firmino, when if he's not playing well enough, we've got Jota, we've got Shaqiri, we've got Minamino. If he wasn't playing well enough for the team, he wouldn't be in the team.
There's just no need for, you're right, the witch on things is senseless. And I think that's there's a bunch of, we always see over exaggerations when it comes to reactions, again, particularly online, particularly in the world we sort of inhabit. It's completely unnecessary, because you're right, Liverpool are top of the league. The front three are performing, we're scoring goals. And so at the top end of the pitch, we are performing. So it's not a pressing concern. If you know, again, if it's only an issue if someone better is coming along and Bobby Firmino's being played for no reason other than out of like some sort of weird, like England-like favouritism, where you just play someone based on reputation or something, which I don't think would ever happen at Liverpool. Or if we stop scoring and we stop being able to break teams down, and maybe we need to refresh it, and he's the one where you're not going to take Salah and Mane out, you might look to then revolutionise it by doing something different, by putting Jota in or doing something like that. But at the moment, while it's working, we're complaining because I use this analogy a lot, but we're complaining because like the radio is not working in our Ferrari. You know, that's pretty much our complaint at the moment. But go on, Georgia, anything else to add?
I was like, we spoke about it and then we're talking about form and things like that. And again, we've got to bring up the fact there are no fans. Like, Bobby Firmino is this showman. He plays football for like a crowd to entertain. Yeah. Like, it's Brazilian. Like, it is what they do. Neymar spoke about it time and time again of, you know, he's as much there to put on a show as he is to kind of play football. Now, there is no crowd, and you don't know how that affects a player. You don't know whether, you know, I think the crowd miss watching Bobby Firmino and singing a song, and, you know, that's the one that guarantees everybody to kind of lift the spirits. And
yeah,
you miss that as a fan to go there and to shout at him and to sing a song and hope that you're going to be the one that lifts him up. He probably misses it as a player, and we don't think of that, of the impact it has on them as well.
Yeah, I do like the idea that he just needs the Greatest Showman soundtrack to be played and then he'll be absolutely fine. Massive week this is looming. Of course, down the road, we've got Manchester City, Chris, and in terms of the league, you know, it's not the end of the world. Liverpool don't go and win there, but I think we've seen time and time again over the last three seasons that the Man City games have proven absolutely pivotal to where the titles ended up. It would be foolish of us to think this is anything but exactly that, really.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, obviously they're a game behind us, aren't they? But, you know, if they win their game in hand, I think they go 2 points behind us. So for all the talk about Manchester City this season and the poor results and the poor performances, they're not far behind us, and they'll be looking at this and making sure that a repeat of last year doesn't happen. You know, when we played that game early, didn't we? And we beat them, and, you know, that set the tempo for Liverpool's season, and it really did, I think, probably at that point, make Manchester City think, not this season, boys. And I think Pep Guardiola will be making sure doing his best to make sure that doesn't happen again this season, because I think 5 points will feel like 10 points if Liverpool beat them, if the gap is that much, and the performance isn't there, and that Liverpool, you know, do put them so far behind them in the rearview mirror. So yeah, massive, massive, massive week. And, you know, Atalanta, obviously, I know we don't want to talk about it because it's tonight and stuff, Paul, in case people are watching later, but probably the toughest game in the group as well. You know, the way that they've been playing so far and the way that they've put their performances in over the last sort of 18 months. I'm very, very thankful, should I say, that Liverpool have got two wins under the belt in the Champions League already, because I think the focus has to shift to Manchester City this week.
There's breathing room, isn't there, Emma, in the Champions League? That I'm not saying, you know, for the sake of our conversation, we will just kind of skip past it for now, because I don't think it's totally relevant, other than maybe fitness issues or whatever for Liverpool for
the
weekend.
It's a good thing that it's Tuesday, though, Paul. Tuesday, yeah. Sunday late. I mean, that really helps us.
Yeah, absolutely. But I think the thing with the Man City stuff is, right, you know, we work on the logic of them winning their game in hand, a 5-point gap after, you know, eight games, whatever, you know, there or thereabouts, whatever it'll be by the time they do finally level it up. A 5-point gap over Manchester City at any point is a wonderful thing. And I think the idea that Man City have finished or whatever is been over exaggerated. It always is at this start of the season. People are always looking to glom on to some sort of weakness and make it out like it's bigger than it is. But I think there is a point coming at this season, and if we can play our cards right, we play our game right, I think psychologically similar to last season a little bit, and with maybe Pep Guardiola's future slightly up in the air, I think we can get in their heads if we do put another lead down ahead of them.
Yeah, I mean, these games are now, they're statement games. They're the kind of games where if you win, it can give you the confidence and the momentum that can carry you through 3, 4, 5 games afterwards, immediately afterwards. You know, and it's like we talk about this, you know, ahead of Merseyside derbies, talk about it ahead of, you know, trips to like Old Trafford against sort of, you know, like old rivals like that, where there is more sting to the game. There is, and there's no denying it. You know, games against Manchester City now, because of the quality that they have, you know, as you say, yes, that, you know, they haven't been performing to the same levels, but let's go by the logic that they're still very much kind of close on Liverpool's tails, then yes, it is a match that you need to be going there and you need to be trying to win, because it can really lift the boys. It can lift the season, and it can, while we've got these injuries. And let's remember as well that City, they've got a lot of injuries, so there's a bit of an element of an unknown here, and it's a real test because it's about how both teams kind of manage that injury rotation. And I think it's going to be very interesting tactically to see how both teams set up. And I think that's perhaps why this weekend is probably more of a challenge, I think, than perhaps the games last season, because we knew what to expect from both teams. We knew what our strengths and what their weaknesses were. Whereas now, I mean, who knows? Because you don't know how both teams are going to set up in terms of, you know, personnel, in terms of formation. So I think that's another challenge. And I think if Liverpool were to overcome that with a weakened team against a weakened City team, then I think that would be a statement. And it'll be Liverpool sort of reminding everyone in the league, look, we're still top of the table. We're in a good position in the Champions League. If they can go and beat City, this is what we can do with a weakened team.
Yeah, I think it's very hard for teams to recover. If Liverpool, I mean, given that, you know, Man City actually won this season's league by beating us last season at the Etihad, it'd be a real shock to them to find themselves, you know, between 5 to 8 points behind us in the title. I'm not sure how their heads would handle that. Weird. Georgia, we've been teeing it up for a number of weeks now, but you're about to become a TV star on us. Is it tonight, 10:30, BT Sport?
Yeah, tonight, 10:30, BBC Sport 3, and then anyone in Europe on Insight TV, same time. Yeah.
Do you want to just tell everyone watching just a little bit about what it is?
Yeah, so it's Ultimate Goal. That's the name of the show, and it's by the same makers of The Next Jamie Vardy, and it's essentially, you know, 31 females or female footballers looking to kind of live and train as professionals for a week, and then the 31 get cut down to 16. And again, those 16, you know, play a showcase game at the end in front of agents and scouts. And the aim of it is to, you know, the ultimate goal, if you like, is to get that pro contract and to try and, you know, boost your career in any way. But I think the thing that we realised is from kind of having a week or two of kind of media and interviews and things is, although we say that, you know, the ultimate goal of the show when it was pitched was for that pro contract, I think coming away from it, we kind of realised that everybody's was a bit different. Like, success looks different to everybody. So for some girls, it was going back to their club with kind of newfound confidence. For others, it was leaving the game as a whole, going into coaching, going into other things, because they realised that's where their kind of passion lies. And yeah, I think, you know, there's, on top of that, there's masterclasses in there from Freddie Lundberg, Farrah Williams, Peter Crouch, Robin Van Persie as well. There's a whole kind of host of names in there.
Did he host the left footed shooting session?
Just left footed, yeah. It was really hard. In just pure Dutch. We had to learn it. Yeah, it was real. No, he was incredible. But yeah, so it was kind of a whole host of things and a real amazing experience. But it's finally on the TV tonight, 10:30, BT Sport 3.
Is it hosted by Dana White? Because I think the show would do better being hosted by Dana White.
No, that's the Ultimate Fighter. No, this is, again, hosted by, well, kind of hosted by the Kamisa Twins. And we had the manager in Ennio Luco and ex-Everton goalie Rachel Brown-Finnis, who are both our managers.
Amazing. Well, there you go. Check it out on BT Sport. BT aren't giving us any money to promote this. We're doing this to promote Georgia. So yeah, do check it out. So if you can find it, watch it anyway. I don't care where you watch it. Just make sure that you do watch it. And check out our very own Georgia Stevens on that old telly box. But listen, guys, thank you so much for joining us for the podcast this week. That's been absolutely fantastic. Feeling loads better about all the issues. We'll have loads more coming for you later on this week. Of course, the build-up show for Manchester City will follow. If you're watching this live, of course, we've got our watch-along commentary tonight for the Atalanta game, which is on Hot Mic and here on YouTube as well. And if you need something to keep you occupied between now and then, or any point during the week, we've got a three-part series with former Liverpool CEO Peter Moore, a real in-depth deep dive into his life, from bringing Reebok to Liverpool to becoming the CEO, and all the highs and lows, literally, you know, everything we covered, everything was brilliant. That's on the redmantv.com. Have a little look and listen to that, and go and sign up to the website.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.